So quickly, for the overview for my session, I just want to talk about who we are, the Science Policy Office, what we do, and then why you should communicate with Congress, and then how to get involved. So who we are. I'm the Director of Science Policy. We've had this position, the Agronomy, Crop, and Soil Science Societies, have had this position since 94 in Washington. We've got a new policy programs coordinator, that's me, Karen Gala, who's been there just since February. It's a new position, a permanent position, we hope. We have a Congressional Science Fellow, Marcy Gallo. She's with Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, and oddly enough, she was going to be here today for another session of mine, but today actually starts the Senate debate of the Farm Bill, and she was told she had to stay there and be the resource for the Farm Bill for Senator Lieberman. And then we have a science policy intern, Barbara Fricks, who is going to be with our office from 3 to 6 months. Those last two positions, I want to tell any of you that are young faculty or middle faculty or older faculty that the Congressional Science Fellowship is an annual application process. You spend 1 year in either a Senate personal office or a representative's office or on a committee like the Agriculture Committee, and you get paid $53,000, and you're in Washington for a solid year, and it's one of the most incredible opportunities you can ever have. I was a Congressional Science Fellow with the Senate Agriculture Committee. I worked with Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana, and it was a life-transforming experience for me. And even if your heart and soul is in research or extension education, this one-year opportunity is probably one of the biggest learning experiences of your entire life. So I think in January, the applications are being accepted. You can look on our website under scholarships and fellowships. But I encourage you to apply. It's an experience you can never imagine having, seeing how policy is made, as ugly as it can get, seeing how policies are made in this great nation of ours. And then for those who don't have a PhD, there's our internship program. It's 3 to 6 months in my office in D.C., and you get real hands-on experience working with Congress, meeting with senators, developing policy briefing papers, interacting extensively with our membership in our grassroots advocacy. So what do? In a nutshell, we do two things. We educate both our scientists, you all, and Congress. We take your knowledge and we translate it into lay terms for Congress. We advocate as well, and that we're doing increasingly because of the funding picture is getting so desperate for our scientists. Funding is it's really not going up in most of the agencies. It's going down in some of them. So we advocate both for legislation, such as the Farm Bill, which is on the Senate floor today as we speak, or more important lately has been funding for our sciences. And the principal agencies we've been focused on are the USDA, and we have representatives here today from that agency. We've got the National Science Foundation and then the Department of Energy Office of Science. Those seem to be the three principal agencies or areas where our scientists obtain their funding. And there are others, NASA, clearly, with over a $12 billion budget, and NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. DOD has a fair amount of research dollars for some of our members as well. So under scientists, we brought in Dr. Thomas DeSutter from North Dakota State University about a month ago to meet with his representative, Earl Pomeroy. And the first thing we do with our scientists is we work with them closely to develop a one-page document. And that's how all communications occur in Capitol Hill with members of Congress. They want a one-page format that has everything they need to know so they can just keep that and not have to go further and to do further research. A member of Congress can do 5 lunches in 1 day, can have 25 to 30 meetings in a day, and he or she has to be able to glean all the information within maybe a 30-second scan of that one-pager. And it's a good example of that is we went to visit with Senator Kent Conrad, the junior senior senator from North Dakota, and he was out with the press when we came in his office getting interviewed with camera going, and then he came running into our office and he said, "Give me the 2-minute version because I've got to go to the floor to introduce an amendment." So he picked up our one pager and he scanned it quickly, and then he had about 6 questions, and it was incredibly, I was amazed at how quickly he assimilated the information, asked the questions, Dr. DeSutter answered them, Dr. DeSutter told him what we wanted, and then Senator Conrad said, "Thanks for coming in, I got to go." So we do things on one page format, and for a lot of scientists that can be a bit challenging. You're used to more of a publishing journal articles, figures, tables, and so on. So our experience has helped us learn how to do that. to translate some of the more complicated areas into more simple verbiage. So in this case, Dr. DeSutter talked about the importance of soils to North Dakota because most members of Congress don't even know why soils are important, and the soil facts of North Dakota, and then he wanted to talk about nutrient management and soil salinity and acidity, which are really critical problems in North Dakota agriculture. We also educate Congress. This is a Farm Bill position paper, another one-pager we produced in preparation for this 2007 Farm Bill. Every 5 years, more or less, the House and the Senate write a comprehensive piece of legislation called the Farm Bill, and it deals with all programs, many programs in conservation, the commodity programs, nutrition, research, energy programs, and it gives them like a legislative authorization so they can be funded for approximately 5 years. But we saw in the energy title, now that there's this big craze about biofuels, whether you believe in it or not, Congress believes in it. So they've got an energy title, an energy section of the Farm Bill, and in that they want to provide legislation that'll create programs that'll help this so-called cellulosic ethanol biofuel vision become a reality. Well, we noticed right away in early drafts of the bill that they had all their focus on molecular biology, which was great. But we went to the Senate staffers and said, look, it's great to do the molecular biology to come up with these new varieties, but you know, that and the greenhouse experiments are wonderful, but if you don't take them to the field to do field trials, you're not going to be able to provide this new varieties to farmers to plant to produce the biomass you're looking for. So we stressed that in our one-pager and met with them, and in a portion of our cropping systems and crop breeding and cropping systems proposal from our Farm Bill one-pager is actually included in the Senate Farm Bill. So we were real happy that that happened. And again, it's another way we interact and educate Congress, because these guys were well-meaning for Senator Harkin's staff, but they had no idea that you actually have to field test these plants, these new varieties, before you can actually give them to farmers. So advocacy. As I said, we work closely with Congress advocating for our sciences. In this case, this is legislation, again, tied to the Farm Bill since it's timely. And this is just a summary document that came off the Senate website. But another area where we worked on closely was there's a Biomass Research and Development Advisory Committee, a federal committee that, in a nutshell, it advises the secretaries of energy and agriculture about how they're going to produce all this biomass for this vision of all these of biofuels in this nation. And on that, there was not an agronomist or a crop scientist or a soil scientist. And that was just kind of outrageous to us that a committee that's supposed to advise on producing all this biomass that comes out of the ground wouldn't have that expertise. Naturally, they had the engineers. They're ubiquitous. But they didn't have our expertise. So we're used to being the low on the totem pole. So we went and we approached both the House and Senate on this. And to keep it short, we've got our expertise included in the House bill, and we found out Friday that it's going to be included in the Senate bill. So knock on wood, we'll have one of ours on this important advisory committee. And then from a funding perspective, that's where we're really more and more putting our efforts into from our office into this advocacy area. And some of you probably received some of our action alerts. It's an email system. We send please support NSF funding type emails, and you read the email and hopefully click on the link, and you go to our Science Policy Action Center. We have a letter written for you. You put your name and address, and you click send, and it goes to your senators and your representative. So along those lines, we also work a lot with coalitions, because our societies alone don't have the staff or the budget to go at it alone trying to get these increases in funding, in this case for the National Science Foundation. So through our coalition activities, we're able to have a stronger voice. We all have a common message. In this case, this was a activity we did last September, just 2 months ago. We brought in a group of scientific societies, including our three, brought in 40 scientists. They went to Capitol Hill to meet with their senators and their representative, and they told them to give a 10% increase for the National Science Foundation budget for this fiscal year, which is 08. And within that one pager, again, we do everything in one page. If you get any message from here, it's one page. But within that one pager, we alluded to some of the great achievements that came out of NSF-supported research, like the MRI. Google actually came out of NSF-supported research, two scientists that worked in that area, and some other important developments in our country. All right, so now you know who we are, kind of what we do. So why you're thinking, so why should I communicate with Congress? Well, it's essential that you communicate with Congress because, first, we've seen a decades-long decline in funding for our sciences overall. There's been some blips here and there, but and that's led to, in absolute terms, a decline in grant funding rates. What you need to get from this is just a simple conceptual idea. You don't need to worry about specific numbers, but USDA, which is our longest area of interest for many of our scientists, is kind of the brown black one, second from the bottom, and that goes straight across. And what you need to glean from that is that from 1984 to 2003, there's been a 1.4% increase in agricultural science funding. So it hasn't been very good. Just above that is NASA, and you can see in recent years it's plummeted. And that doesn't even tell the whole story because you have different allocations of dollars within budgets. And NASA put a lot of money into the Mars program, and because of that, biological sciences often are tapped for those funds. In addition to NASA, there's the Department of Energy Office of Science. Within that DOE budget, that's been relatively flat. And the NSF in the red, and that's actually was supposed to be on a doubling track since 2002, which didn't even come close to happening. The budget this year might be about $6 billion for NSF, and I know those are big numbers. I think one senator said, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. But in all honesty, for the whole United States, $6 billion for the total budget of NSF, if it was on the doubling track it was supposed to be, that Congress said it would be on, it would be about $9 billion this year. And then finally, the blue is the National Institutes of Health, and that's really the model that we're hoping to follow in our sciences. In 1998, the whole NIH stakeholder community came together in a big powwow and they said, we're going to double the budget for NIH. That's our goal. We're going to do it in 5 years. So we want everybody to agree that the only message we're going to give Congress is to double the budget in 5 years. We'll fight over that budget later on, whether it goes to diabetes research or allergies or mental health research. But for now, when we go to the Hill, we used to say double. And clearly they have a more compelling message too, in that every member of Congress knows somebody or has had a family member that's had a cancer or some other illness. Regardless, they stuck together, and from 1998 to 2003, the NIH budget went from about 13.5 billion to 27.2 billion. So they achieved their doubling. It's just an enormous success story. Well, our sciences, we would like to follow the same format to some extent. So that's how we kind of can change that downward spiral, is by getting involved. And that's the whole part about communicating science to the public. For me, from the perspective of policymakers, communicating with Congress. And that's why I believe it's so important that you get involved. So how do you get involved? Well, it's all about relationships. Believe it or not, the success of people in Washington working with Congress is based on their developing personal relationships with their congressional delegation. And first and foremost, if you're interested in doing that, which I encourage all of you to do, you want to work with your science policy office, and that's us. And I have contact information later on. I also have a bunch of business cards, which I'd be glad to give out at the end. So work with us because it's our job. We're experienced in this, and we can guide you through the entire process. And it's really exciting. I've only had one scientist come in the last 8 years to D.C. to take part in congressional visits that didn't have a good time. And that was because he was extremely nervous and he just never felt comfortable meeting with his delegation. But all the rest came, and half of them said, I came here thinking this was a waste of time, and why are we even talking to Congress? It's none of our business. And I left here thinking, God, it's an amazing experience. I can't believe how enjoyable it was and how interested they were in what I had to say as a constituent. So communication then is key. And there are basically four ways to communicate to Congress. You can do letters, faxes, calls, and emails. Well, the old days, letters, handwritten letters, were the, and still are the most effective way to interact with a member of Congress. Unfortunately, since 2001, when there was an anthrax attack on one of the Senate office buildings, Congress has gone to a format of irradiating its mail. So it has to go to Ohio and get irradiated, and then it comes back and it's delivered to them. So it takes about 3 weeks to get a letter to your member of Congress. And so since we deal mostly with timely issues, it's just not a way that we recommend people communicating with Congress. Faxes are good too, But first of all, getting one of my constituent scientists working at the University of Nebraska to use, you know, a campus fax machine, which is probably illegal, to fax a letter in to an office that might be getting buried in faxes, is usually not a positive way to do things. The staff members get very resentful. Despite all the power these members of Congress have, they might have one fax machine. And a staffer wants to send a fax to somebody else, and the machine is tied up with 200 faxes that I've, you know, orchestrated having sent in. They get really resentful. So we don't usually go with fax alerts either. Calls are very effective, but it's quite frankly hard to get a scientist at an academic institution to pick up the phone and make a cold call. I think that takes a little bit more courage and enthusiasm, and I recognize that a lot of people aren't willing to call a member of Congress cold and say, support the NSF. And at the same time, there needs to be a little bit of an orientation on how to make a call to a congressional office, because they're very savvy. They get a lot of calls, and the front desk person, his or her job is to make sure your call doesn't get by. If they can deal with it right there, then they will. Because you think about it, you know, as you go further through the chain, there's more and more communications, and they have to deal with those. So the front desk person can finish the situation right there, they will. So that's why we have to give you some coaching prior to making that call. It's just a reality of the inundation they get. I think in 2003, they get something like 90 million communications just electronic. I can't imagine how many phone calls Congress got. So lastly, our emails. And while it's questionable sometimes about the impact of an email alert, it is the fastest way to go. It's the easiest by far. And it's the future. If you look at any congressional staffer, again, since 2001, when all the phones in D.C. crashed because everybody panicked, members of Congress couldn't communicate with their staff and with each other. And so now they all have BlackBerries. And the staff, of course, they all have BlackBerries too. And it's becoming kind of just an absurd situation where people don't even talk anymore. They just BlackBerry back and forth. And with us off the Hill, they'd rather not return our call. They just send us an email on their BlackBerry. So we find that email communications is the way to go. And we've subscribed to a service called the Science Policy Action Center. And it's on our website, our science policy website. But it's an incredible tool. And in a nutshell, we'll send you an email saying, action alert, contact your senators to tell them to support USDA funding. And there's a little blurb, and you click on the link. And the link takes you to something like this, which is on our webpage. And basically, you just put in your zip code, and then the letter pops up with the names of your senators and your representative, and you put in your name and address, and you click send, and it goes to them. And the way they look at it, I've talked to many congressional staffers, and they say, clearly, we're not stupid. We know that these are form emails, just like a form letter. But what we do in our offices is we keep tallies. And if we get a tally, say, of 10 emails received on the same topic, then it jumps above the rest of them, and we look at it. So that's what we're just trying to get them to do, is look at the issue. And without that communication on your part as constituents, we can get nowhere. They look at me basically like just a suit who's paid to talk. I'm not a constituent. I'm not important. In fact, when I go to offices with scientists and members, I try not to talk, because staffers tell us, we don't want to hear from you. You know, we want to hear from our constituent. He or she is the important person in this meeting, not you. So it's critical that you do this. And it's a simple step, and it literally takes 2 minutes. And there are some considerations, which right away I bring up. If you're a federal employee, you need to make sure, or a university scientist, you need to make sure that you can do this. And if you can't from school, from the university, for example, you might be able to do it from home from your personal computer. And USDA, for example, you have to be extremely careful if you're a USDA employee, because they have certain rules, and you just need to clear it so that you don't get in trouble. But it's very fast, very effective, and it's the only way, if this communication, that we're going to make a difference. Another way to get involved is more laborious, takes more time, but can be more satisfying, and that's a congressional visit. And you can do that either at home, at your district or your state, or in D.C. when we have occasional what we call fly-ins. We bring scientists in and we pay for the cost of that trip, and we take them to Capitol Hill and chaperone them and to meet with their delegation. But clearly, we have thousands of members. We just can't bring in thousands of members into Washington. There's no money for it, and we don't have the capacity with three people working in the office to lead all of you to the Hill, and you have to sacrifice 2 to 3 days of your time, which is not easy. So I recommend that during August, Congress always takes August off in general, to go home, to be with their constituents, and that's when you as scientists can go in. And it's a little daunting at first, but working through our office, we can walk you through that process. And the thing that most folks don't realize is that they really look forward to meeting with you. I mean, they welcome you. These members of Congress know that they need to be reelected and that their voters are critical. So you can make these visits, and we can help you do that. So again, it's all about building these relationships. Oh, and finally, one last thing on that slide. It's about building relationships over time. If staffers have told me, if I know you're just going to contact me one time about an issue, then I'll just kind of blow you off because I know you're not coming back. But if you make it clear that this is a long-term relationship of any type, maybe twice a year I get an email from you or maybe a call one day, then I know you're going to be there and then I can't ignore you. Because he says, my job as a staffer is to put out fires. So if you don't become somewhat of a small fire, like you're there and I always know you're there, then I won't listen to you because I know that you won't care. So it's a kind of a cold analysis of how things work, but it's also a fact. So anyway, we're here to serve you. We love doing this work. We love helping you get connected with Congress. I personally believe in our democratic process, and I think that I feel like there's kind of an obligation as a citizen to be connected with your delegation. I know many folks are jaded about what's going on in Congress. It's not the best time. There's a lot of partisanship, and they're not always dealing with important issues this country needs to have addressed. But at the same time, if we don't speak up, then the special interest groups will. And since our commodity is our vote and our contacts with our members, special interest groups, they can have a fundraiser, a $2,000 plate dinner, and raise $25,000 for a representative's reelection campaign. Well, we can't do that. We don't have the wherewithal to do that. But we can have 20 people say to Representative Latham from Iowa that soil science and soils are very important to this nation, and you need to take leadership on this bill. And he'll be very responsive to that because at the end of the day, he needs to get reelected. And if he's got dozens or hundreds of constituents moaning about something he did, he's not going to be very comfortable at all. So that's our strength and our value is in our votes and in our ability to interact with members of Congress. So you can call us, email me. All this is on the Society's webpage, so it's easy to find. We have a science policy webpage, a science policy report that just started going out to you all about a month ago. It's a biweekly electronic publication, and the first part is on funding opportunities. We wade through all the federal grants announced that month and try to pull out the relevant ones, summarize them, and have a link to the announcement. Because I know a lot of folks are looking for soft money. And then lastly, the Science Policy Action Center, again, is just an incredible resource, which I recommend you explore. So I don't know how you're going to handle this, Sean, but I'm done for my section.